I have a couple of letters that I want to share.
No. What have you found?
Well, the first one is from one of Brigham Young's daughters. Her name is Clarissa. Mm-hmm. Little cutie. And she said, "No child ever loved, revered, and cherished a father more than I did mine. He had the affection and tenderness of a woman for his family and friends. Each day of my childhood stands forth in my memory as one long round of happiness."
So I'm guessing she was his favorite daughter, if she's talking about him like that, right?
I mean, Camry, I don't know. But what I do know is one of his other daughters, Sousa, what she said about him was, "No other fact of father's life was so profound a proof of his true nobility and greatness as his life at home and the influence which he radiated there. But to his children, he was an ideal father. Kind to a fault, tender, thoughtful, just, and firm. None of us feared him. All of us adored him. What his life and love meant to his family, only their subsequent lives may testify."
That's interesting. But, you know, that kind of sentiment from his children is pretty commonly expressed. They seem to have felt that way about him. And yeah, I'm sure there are the little strifes that always come along with being a child and kind of bucking up against authority and finally declaring your independence. But I think it's important they didn't fear him, that they saw him as a loving parent. And I think it's important to understand that against the background of the way he himself grew up. His mother died when he was very young. His father, though, was apparently a stern disciplinarian. And Brigham said later of him that he would govern the kids with a word and a blow, and the blow usually came first. And Brigham apparently resolved that he was not going to be that kind of father. I actually have a quotation here from Brigham himself. "The Lord has placed me to be the head of a family. Let me be so in all humility and patience, not as a tyrannical ruler, but as a faithful companion, an indulgent and affectionate father. Kind looks, kind actions, kind words, and a lovely, holy deportment towards them will bind our children to us with bands that cannot easily be broken, while abuse and unkindness will drive them from us. If my family and my brethren and sisters will not be obedient to me on the basis of kindness and a commendable life before all men and before the heavens, then farewell to all influence."
Members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints represent a faith practiced by millions, a faith which has also inspired its share of controversy.
I think if you look at Brigham Young's whole life, well, it's a conundrum.
I'm Camry Bagley Fox, and together with John Wilson and Professor Daniel Peterson, we work to uncover unexpected twists in the character of a man that we thought we already knew. History is often painted in stark, unyielding strokes, but Brigham Young's personal life tells a much more complex story. This episode concludes our fascinating conversation with historians Lisa Olson Tate and Brittany Chapman Nash. What was Brigham Young like as a father?
On the one hand, as I said, there was a lot of time when he wasn't there because he was always busy and always involved in all the many things that he had to do. But he did make time to spend with his family. They had a nightly prayer time that was the bedrock ritual of the family. There was a bell that he or maybe a child would be allowed to ring in the Lion House, and the signal was, when you hear that bell, you come to the big parlor in the Lion House. It was about 7 o'clock every evening. And then the whole family would come. The wives had their own seats, and Brigham Young had a designated place, and they would all kneel and they would pray, and sometimes some of the children would play the piano or sing. So it was a time for the family to spend time together. And also a time when Eliza R. Snow in particular would talk with Brigham about things she was seeing, things she was concerned about, either in the family or in the community. And that may have been actually where the idea of organizing the young women was hatched, was in one of those discussions. It's interesting because he is seen as such a towering, authoritative, sometimes dictatorial figure, but that is not how he was with his families. They say that the children who left recollections all say, "We weren't afraid of him." And that seems to be a product of his very deliberate philosophy about parenting. So one thing he said, this is in 1864, he says, "Kind hearts and lovely acts to children will bring them into subjection 100 times better than the rod." I lay by the rod and kiss my child, and if I don't bind my children to me better than Solomon, then I am mistaken. And he seems to have really lived by that. The wives were expected to live by that as well. There was no toleration for any kind of, you know, physical abuse or really even anger. He talks to women about how if you don't want your children to be angry, don't be angry. Don't, you know, act the way that you want your children to act
to teach them. That's so easy.
And I think he lived by those ideals.
What extent would you say that Brigham Young thought women should have autonomy over their spiritual and personal decisions? Because he obviously believed in a kind of traditional standpoint, but the women also seem to have a decent amount of independence. So how do you feel like he felt about that balance?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, an interesting perspective, because like Lisa said, we kind of imagine Brigham Young as being this really dictatorial character who wouldn't want much agency for women. But there is this paradox. So I think if we go back to the idea of spheres, the men led in the church and the women had autonomy within their sphere, which ecclesiastically would have been other women and children. And so I think we see a great deal of their own leadership. There was a lot that they did that they didn't need male permission to do. They organized relief societies, the young women organizations, the primary. They had the support of male leaders, and they felt like they needed that in order to do any kind of movement on a large scale. But with that support, they mobilized and constructed their own organizations. I would say within their own spheres, they functioned with a large amount of autonomy.
This is another great quote from Brigham Young that shows how he kind of knew that there were these gender dynamics that could be kind of tricky at times. He says, "I don't care how many good principles my wives set before me, but if they are capable of leading me, but I not know it, they can do what they please with me. But a woman has got to be smart enough to lead Brother Brigham without his knowing. And if any woman or wife lead a husband and him not know it, I don't blame her."
People did definitely look to the Young Home for an example.
Yeah. Right.
I think that's true. And I think also the Young household is just kind of a self-conscious epitome of what he thought the community's goals and ideals should be.
Look like. Right.
And so to some extent, people are taking their cues from him. I mean, he's reported to have said, "All Israel are watching my family and watching the example that they set."
No pressure to your kids.
I know.
Yeah, right.
They were very conscious
right?
of that.
I think Brigham Young thought that women should exercise agency within the framework of the gospel. There's a quote from Brigham Young where he says, "I have never counseled women to follow their husbands to hell." Mm. So he valued individual righteousness, individual testimony, individual faith. And this would be true for men as well. People who are trying to build the kingdom of God, they need to be anxiously engaged. They need to exercise agency. They need to bring about much good of their own free will and choice. But it needs to be within that framework of the kingdom. I guess to the extent that he did believe women should obey their husbands, that was part of that male headship paradigm. And it was part of the temple at the time, like that was how they understood what the relationship should be. So women shouldn't be uppity, women shouldn't be dictatorial, women shouldn't be trying to control everything unless they can do it without him knowing,
right?
But within that, he wants them to be fully converted and engaged individuals within the kingdom.
Within the religious side of things, did Brigham Young grant women any ecclesiastical authority? And if so, what were the limits of that?
Late in 1867, Brigham Young does explicitly call and commission Eliza R. Snow to go around and reorganize relief societies in the church around the territory. And that is how this women's sphere then grows within the community, is initially through the organization of Relief Society, and then there's the retrenchment movement, and then they organize the young ladies, and then primary comes in 1878. They're all under the umbrella of the Relief Society. And Eliza R. Snow is the undisputed leader of all of that until her death in 1887. As Brittany said, there's a great deal of autonomy that women exercise within that sphere and within these organizations. But everybody knows when the chips are down, which sphere is subordinate to which sphere.
Right.
It seems like a lot of the women in the church had the same amount of autonomy as others in that time period, with even more responsibility within the communities.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're seeing them in positions of leadership for sure amongst their community. Obviously, we're not seeing women running for governor or anything.
Yeah, but you didn't see that anywhere. I mean, women in that period couldn't even vote.
Right.
So they certainly couldn't run for office.
Yeah, well, if someone would have done it, it would have been Eliza R. Snow.
Yeah, she's an outstanding personality.
Yeah, she seemed like a really good match for Brigham Young.
By the 1860s, she's seen as Zion's poetess. She's written about 400-plus poems, some of which have been set to music and become hymns in our hymnal. Her brother, Lorenzo, who will become president of the church, went to Oberlin College, which for the early 19th century was pretty amazing. Almost nobody went to college, and he did. She was educated at home, but she learned to keep the books for her dad's business, and she's gifted in a lot of ways.
Now, she's the Heavenly Mother poet, right?
Yes.
But love that. Right, it's the truth is reason, truth eternal. Yeah. Tells me I have a mother there. Love that. Yeah.
Well, I do have a quote from her. Do you know of any place on the face of the earth where a woman has more liberty and where she enjoys the glorious privileges as she does here as a Latter-day Saint?
As we've been talking about her, I'm like, I would have been friends with this girl, you know, like that. Yeah. And I think you see these women at that time trying to scrape out our place a little bit more. I can see Eliza saying, I'm a woman and I have skills and I can offer things to this community. And so I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to like investigate the things that I'm excited about and pulled toward.
She's a good model, I think. She's absolutely faithful. She really believes this stuff. She has a strong conviction that Joseph was a prophet, that Brigham has the authority and all that sort of thing. But she doesn't just roll over and play dead.
But in my experience, being faithful also means striving for greater equality and speaking out when you have something that you're passionate about, which it seems that Eliza really did.
If you believe in a cause, you want to be able to contribute to that cause too.
So being married to Brigham Young, did that play a role in her ability to have access to her accomplishments?
He clearly allows her quite a bit of autonomy.
And it seems that he tends to seek out equals in his wives, you know, and in his community, that he wants somebody who's going to actively participate and contribute.
He seemed to really, really trust her.
I think he does.
I had one last question that I asked the women scholars that I chatted with that led to a really fun discussion. So I'd love to share that with you.
Great.
I do think that Brigham Young fundamentally, at the core of his soul, wanted people to flourish, wanted people to thrive. And the way that that would happen was by embracing the gospel of Jesus Christ and living it and being part of the community and being dedicated to the project of building Zion. And I think he genuinely, that is what he wanted. That is what drove him. He did it in the way he knew how. He did it within the context of the world that he lived in, and so did everybody else.
Right.
But in some ways, I think he was a little bit more broad, a little bit more liberal, if you want to use that word, and a little more enlightened. I don't know what word you would want to use.
So you use the word enlightened, which I think is not a word that widely people would use to describe Brigham Young. I guess my question is, why does he feel unenlightened from our modern viewpoint?
I think it's easy to point to the way that race and the priesthood was treated during his time, because that just seems so glaringly wrong to us now, that it's easy to ascribe like, man, they did not know how things should be.
Which is true.
Yes, yes. So it's easy to point to things like that and define Brigham Young by those things. Whereas if we were to look at women's sphere at the time, what kind of world did women live in, and how did Brigham Young view that world? Was he willing to let them grow? Was he willing to let them change and contribute openly? I would say in some ways, yes, more so than they may have experienced in other parts of the world at that time.
I think it's true in general that if we look back on past figures, we tend to see them in terms of our own standards and values. We call that presentism as historians, but we can't help it. You know, there's reason that there's been change over time. I think Brittany's right that we're at a moment now where our thinking about history is becoming more nuanced and more able to deal with complexity.
Able to hold both mm-hmm. sides.
Mm-hmm. And again, in past generations, they saw history as moral tales of example and great men and how all the big things happened and so forth. And Brigham Young was treated within that tradition for better and for worse. I think we're at a place now where we're able to say, no, actually, we want to see the underbelly. We want to see the warts. We want to see the difficulties. Because if anything, that gives us hope for ourselves. If God can work with these imperfect people, I know he's working with me and I know I'm imperfect. So there's some inspiration there. Brigham Young has definitely become a lightning rod. He always was, but he's kind of easy to throw under the bus. As a historian, anytime we're looking at people in such black and white terms, I want to go, wait.
You know that if you're just viewing black and white, you have to step back and reevaluate.
So we just have to give people grace and try to, it's most useful, I think, to try to understand people as they saw themselves and the world as they saw it. And that doesn't mean that we can't look back at certain things and go, yeah, that wasn't good.
Right.
That wasn't right. That was wrong. But that's a separate question from trying to understand what did they think they were doing? How did they see the world?
I think in reality, for most people who are trying to do good, which Brigham Young ultimately was, there is goodness there to be found. And I just keep thinking of the Brené Brown quote, people are hard to hate close up.
Well, and it's true that people followed him. And he wouldn't have had the loyalty and collaboration and cooperation of so many thousands of people if they had just seen him as a despot, as a dictator. In fact, we're doing a project in the department right now where we're going to publish a collection of his letters to the saints. In part, what we're trying to do is answer the question, why would anybody follow him? And when you see the way that he writes to people and counsels with them and expresses kindness, you get a better picture. You get a better feeling for the fact that people loved him and they followed him willingly.
And that's why it's so important to go back to original sources. Like, what were they saying? Yeah. What were they writing?
Yeah.
And then you can make your judgment.
Yeah. I kind of like Brigham Young, actually. I think he's very down to earth. I think he's very human. That having been said, like, I don't feel a need to pass judgment on him. I don't feel like I need to say he was good or he was bad or to sort it all out. Like, he and the Lord will work that out. That's not for me to say. I'm more interested in trying to understand him as he understood himself.
That is not what I was expecting.
Yeah, definitely gave me a ton to think about.
So was it useful to you? Was it helpful?
Oh, for sure. I don't think it's wrong to be like, okay, what they did here was wrong. What they did here was good. But if we're going to judge for the things that Brigham, like for his more unsavory traits, we also need to give him the grace of giving him the benefit of his wonderful traits.
Yeah, I think it's really important to judge people against the background of their time. There's a certain element of charity that I think is really important in understanding people historically.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's just understanding that these men and these women, they were doing the best they knew in the time period that they were in. And everything they did is such a small piece in a much bigger picture that, you know, the Lord has.
I frankly think it's a much more interesting way to engage with history. And I was talking to Janessa yesterday. I was like, I'm not somebody who was ever like, I'm going to dive into church history. That's not something I was interested in. But since these projects have kind of brought that to me, I think it's so fascinating. And it's honestly so much more interesting and stimulating to not just say, oh, Brigham Young was wrong because he did this, or was right because he did this. It's so much more of a brain exercise to gather all the pieces and say, okay, how does this actually fit together within what he was dealing with?
No, that's essential.
Yeah, it's been really interesting to learn about him. And frankly, the more I learn, the more I like about him.